Good morning. My name is Carol Kraus. I'm the Communications Director at the National Institute on Drug Abuse. It's nice to see you all again, and thank you so much for coming this morning. The Monitoring the Future survey is well known to many of us. It measures drug use in several different ways: lifetime, past year, and past month, and in some cases, daily use. In 2011, 46,773 students in the 8th, 10th, and 12th grade were interviewed. We're happy to have some guests with us today who are going to be speaking, and then we'll open it up for questions. And I also want to add that we have this live streaming, and we have some reporters who are also watching this and will be able to ask some questions themselves. We're happy to have with us today Dr. Howard Koh, Assistant Secretary for Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. Honored guest today, thanks for coming. Director Gil Karolikowski, the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. And we have Dr. Lloyd Johnston, University of Michigan, to tell us about his 37th Monitoring the Future survey. Did I get that right this year? Thank you. We have some other guests that we would like to mention who are in the audience today. We have some guests from the Drug Enforcement Administration, Deb Augustine and Sigrid Mellis, thanks for coming. And Richard Lucy, Center for Substance Abuse and Prevention at SAMHSA. So we'd like to get started. I'd like to introduce NIDA Director, Dr. Nora Volkoff.
Good morning. I want to welcome you all to the 37 Monitoring the Future survey press conference. The Monitoring the Future was started in 1975 and has been led by Dr. Lloyd Johnston since then. And it's an extremely important survey for us in terms of public health, because it enables us, by surveying annually the prevalence rates of drug use in this country, to identify new emerging areas, as well as to evaluate whether the prevention interventions that we are targeting towards substance use are actually being effective. This year, as we look through the results that we're obtaining, several things emerge. On the one hand, that have good news, and on the other hand, that are not so good news. And I'm going to emphasize specifically those findings as it relates to the trends that have been occurring in our country, as opposed to just focusing on the differences between 2010 and 2011. But you'll be hearing from that from Dr. Johnston. What is remarkable in my perspective from what we are observing on Monitoring the Future is that there is a significant decrease in the use of cigarette smoking among teenagers, 8th, 10th, and 12th graders. That's actually quite important because cigarette smoking, of course, has very adverse medical consequences. But also the use of cigarettes by adolescents increases the risk to addiction to nicotine on the one hand, but also there is increasing evidence that it may be priming them for the rewarding effects of other drugs of abuse, including the illicit substances. So that decline in cigarette smoking is likely to have downstream consequences, both in medical health as well as substance use disorders. And in fact, cigarette smoking is at its lowest since its the inception of the survey in 1975. And we're seeing actually extremely remarkable, the dramatic decreases in the prevalence rates of daily smoking as well as past month smoking that have gone down for daily smoking more than 60% over a 15-year period, which highlights the importance of prevention messages and prevention interventions as effective. On the other hand, we cannot be complacent because the rates are still very high despite these dramatic decreases. And we're also seeing the emergence of use of tobacco products, other tobacco products. For example, smokeless tobacco is actually among the 12th graders on the past month is 8.2%, which is actually quite high. And there are other tobacco products like cigars that are being used by young people, highlighting the importance of prevention strategies to go after these products. Good news also comes on the alcohol indicators, which also show they are at the lowest since 1996. And for daily alcohol drinking, that is 46% lower than they were in 1996. And for binge drinking, which is also very problematic, it's 30% lower. And again, these exemplify the concept that prevention interventions work and can have a big impact. On the other hand, on the negative side of things are on the arena of marijuana. Over the past 5 years, we have seen trending towards increases on marijuana utilization, particularly among 10th and 12th graders. This is, of the indicators, the one that actually highlighted in my brain as one that is tells us that we cannot become complacent about it, is that we have the highest rates on everyday marijuana smoking among 12th graders since 1981. 6.6% of 12th graders are smoking marijuana daily regularly. And considering the adverse effects of marijuana on memory and learning, that of course we can predict what the consequences are going in terms of educational achievement. The other issue that is problematic, and it's the first time we're actually surveying, is the emergence, which caught the attention in 2008 in the European countries, of synthetic cannabinoids, which are mixed with plants in order to make believe that these are legal highs or herbal highs. Well, they are not herbal high, they are chemical highs, they are cannabinoids. And the survey for the first time evaluated it, and to my surprise, it's extremely high. Among 12th graders, past year use of these synthetic cannabinoids is 11.3%. That is 1 in 9 teenagers, 12th graders, have tried these synthetic cannabinoids in the past year. So highlighting the need to actually do interventions to not just go after in terms of the adverse effects of marijuana such, but the synthetic cannabinoids. Bad news also is that indicators of perception of risk, which continue to go down. Less kids view smoking marijuana regularly as having any harmful effects. This actually is not a good indicator, because throughout the inception of the monitoring the future, we have learned to recognize that the perception of risk predicts whether kids are going to be smoking marijuana or not. So either we do an intervention to change that, or we can predict that the use of marijuana is going to increase. And finally, the other indicator that is we are paying a lot of attention to is the abuse of psychotherapeutics, which we have come to recognize in the past 10 years of the survey have become increasingly prevalent among teenagers, and it has shifted a pattern towards favoring this type of drug for abuse because of the misperception that they are safer than illicit substance, and maintaining very high levels of abuse of these types of drugs. 8.2% of 12th graders admit to the use of Vicodin, which is a pain medication containing opiates, in the past year. 8.3% admit to the use of amphetamines, which is a stimulant medication regularly used for the treatment of ADHD that is being diverted, not just to get high, but actually to improve cognitive performance. So we have been faced and continue to be faced with very high levels of the abuse of psychotherapeutic. We have seen some declines in some, but very, very steady high levels. So as a strategy, what NIDA is doing is relaunching an updated version of its website for on-prescription targeted towards teenagers to provide information, PRX, to actually expand the knowledge about what we know on the adverse effects of psychotherapeutics. And with that, I want to now welcome my colleague, Dr. Howard Koch, who's the Assistant Director for the Health Services. Howard.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nolkoff, and I appreciate so much being part of this critical press conference. And first, I want to thank you for your passion and leadership in this important area for so long. We love spontaneity. Monitoring the future is truly a time-honored public health resource, and one that I've respected for decades as a physician, researcher, professor, former state health commissioner, and now assistant secretary. So Dr. Johnson, congratulations. It's great to meet you finally and to thank you for your decades of contributions to the country. And of course, it's also great to be here with my wonderful colleague, Director Gil Kerlikowske, who you'll be hearing from in just a second. And I want to extend my thanks to my colleagues from Health and Human Services, Sarah Wattenberg, Kirby Bumpus, and Jenny Rosenberg, who have helped so tremendously with today's presentation. I'm going to speak specifically to the results related to tobacco and alcohol and put these data into context. And let me start with tobacco, the leading preventable cause of death and suffering worldwide. We know that half of all lifetime smokers die prematurely from their dependence. So as a nation, our goal for kids in the next generation is to have them live tobacco-free. Yet, despite the data you are hearing today, every day in the United States, more than 3,800 young people under age 18 smoke their first cigarette. More than 1,000 youth under age 18 become daily cigarette smokers. And we also know that more than 80% of adult smokers begin smoking before age 18. So the actual rate of decline being reported today is relatively small compared to the sharp declines we witnessed in the late 90s, and we have much more work to do. We know what works for youth and tobacco. We know that policies that are effective include 100% smoke-free policies in public places, higher cigarette prices, use of media and counter-advertising, access to cessation services and treatments, and very importantly, well-funded state-based tobacco control programs. So we need to accelerate, not slow, the declines in youth cigarette use. What is complicating this picture even further is the growing public health concern about the use of other tobacco products by youth, particularly hookah, water pipes, and small cigars. And the data being presented today suggests that a considerable amount of experimental use of hookahs and more than a quarter of 12th graders who are boys are using small cigars. We need to stress today that these products are not safe alternatives to cigarettes, and in fact, collectively, they represent yet another gateway to addiction. So we must scale up our tobacco control efforts to address this growing portfolio of challenges. And one way we can do that is to do that through robust FDA regulatory action. I want to remind this audience that in 2009, the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act was signed by the president, provides the FDA with the authority to regulate cigarettes, roll your own tobacco, and smokeless tobacco. And so the rule, among other things, prohibits sale of cigarettes and smokeless tobacco to kids younger than 18, prohibits the sale of cigarette packs with fewer than 20 cigarettes, prohibits distribution of free samples of cigarettes, and prohibits tobacco brand name sponsorship of any athletic, musical, or other social or cultural event. And very importantly for this presentation, the law also permits the FDA to issue regulation to extend its jurisdiction over other tobacco products, a process called deeming. In the spring of this year, 2011, the FDA announced their intention to exercise this authority by issuing a regulation to extend its jurisdiction over other tobacco products, including little cigars, pipe tobacco, hookah water pipes, dissolvables, and e-cigarettes. So we look forward to more progress in that area. Turning to underage drinking, we know this is a leading contributor to death caused by injuries. The data now show that some 5,000 people under the age of 21 die each year from alcohol-related injuries as a result of underage drinking. It also contributes to terrible outcomes such as violence and sexual assault, among other things. And we also understand that underage drinking can have lifelong effects on the developing brain, which does not mature until a person reaches his or her mid to late 20s. So even though there has been progress in alcohol use that Dr. Volkoff has mentioned, alcohol remains the drug of choice for the nation's youth, and these rates remain unacceptably high. Nearly two-thirds of 12th graders, just over one-quarter of 8th graders illegally drink alcohol. And with respect to binge drinking, a critical public health challenge, some 21.6% of 12th graders still binge drink, defined as four drinks on one occasion by women and five drinks or more in men. I am very, very grateful to many community leaders, some of whom are in the audience today, who have dedicated their lives to work with vulnerable youth and government leaders and others to increase awareness about the problem of underage drinking. And those groups and others have helped promote policies to address minors' possession of alcohol, underage drinking and driving, the practices of alcohol suppliers, and other strategies. Because of their work, we are seeing some progress, and we're seeing prevention working to some degree, but we need to do more. As I close, I want to stress that the National Institute for Alcohol and Alcohol Abuse just released a very important short screening instrument for healthcare providers to help detect underage drinking among kids and help them get the treatment they need and deserve. And for adults, there have been and will continue to be reimbursable evidence-based screening and referral practices that can provide important opportunities for early detection, intervention, and treatment. So in summary, we are heartened by some of the results that we are sharing today, but there is much more work to do. We must accelerate all our efforts to protect our kids from harm from tobacco and alcohol in the future. And with that, it is my great honor to introduce and turn the program over to my colleague, Director Gil Kerlikowske. Mr. Kerlikowske is the director of the White House Office of the National Drug Control Policy.
Thank you. So I'm not a doctor. I'm the only one up here that actually is not a doctor. But I'm very honored to be here with Dr. Volkoff, who's been a good friend and a good colleague on these issues for me in the 2.5 years that I've been here, and certainly to my friend and colleague, Dr. Howard Koh, who has shown such leadership in this particular area. And then, as many people have been talking about Dr. Lloyd Johnson and his many decades, I know after a while I hear that too, and many, many decades of effort in this. This is an important survey. I think from our standpoint, from the standpoint of the White House, I think the information that's provided is so critical because it really keeps us connected with the future of this country, and the future of this country is certainly in our teenagers, those kids that we want to see highly educated and want to see working and want to see performing well to all of their potential. And that's why every year when this information comes out, it is of great value and great assistance to policymakers. You know, the perspective is that it's not all bad news oftentimes in this area, and that is that over 30 years, we've actually seen historic decreases and improvements in reducing drug use. And despite the increases in drug use over the past several years, over the long term, the rates of drug use among youth today are lower than they were at that time, those decades ago. But we can do a lot more. Well, the president has already noted that we have changed attitudes in this country regarding the rates of smoking. Many of those things were highlighted by Dr. Koh and Dr. Volkoff. And we've changed perceptions in the way, again, in partnership with a lot of other people, the way we look at drunk driving or alcohol-impaired driving in this country. We can do the same thing when it comes to drug use. Well, it's no surprise to the people in this room that these consequences have substantial impact on the future of this country. It impairs the ability of many of our citizens